to the Able Voice Podcast, where your voice is more than a melody, planting seeds in the growing field of clinical music therapy. It's the Able Voice Podcast with Haley and Kim.
Welcome to another Able Voice debrief with Haley and Kim.
Hello, hello.
Today we are chatting about episodes 4 and 5 with Katie and Rachel. Both very different episodes, I would say, in terms of content, but both like really fantastic businesswomen, business-minded people, and really honest with us about their experiences and their journeys to get to where they were. So incredible in their own right, but such wonderful examples of being open and transparent and willing to transfer knowledge over to other people so that we can all thrive and benefit from the experiences of other people, and not really safeguarding those in any way, but really living in a space where they are willing to share their knowledge and what they've learned with other people.
100%. I would agree. The content is definitely different and very niche. And so I think listening back to those episodes, you're able to find very tangible and specific information and tips and suggestions to match your journey and your experiences, but 100% related in the sense that, yeah, we're carving out our own journeys. And I think that's one of the things that I say often I love about our field and the entrepreneurial spirit in general, is that it's a kind of choose your own adventure. And so it was lovely to be able to hear each of them share about their journeys and how they actually landed in this place that they did, and perhaps some of those common threads of what actually shifts our directions to land us where we do in the type of work that we create for ourselves. And yeah, very interesting to hear both of their stories.
And like I said, just so open and raw and honest, and yeah, sometimes a little bit unfiltered, which we love on the Able Voice podcast. Yeah. But one of the topics that we focused on with Katie was money and being able to sustain ourselves as creative professionals, and why this has become such a taboo topic. Like,
yeah,
it's nothing to be ashamed of that when we work in this field, some of the things that are important to us are that we get paid.
Heck yeah.
And that we get paid a reasonable amount for the work that we are doing, as well as being able to financially sustain ourselves in terms of paying our bills, paying, for some of those things that are self-care acts. So being able to treat ourselves to a meal, go out dancing and do karaoke and do the things that fill us up. Those are not always free. So being able to have a lifestyle that is thriving, but also that is aligning with you as a person in order to be the best professional that you can be. And this is not something that should be taboo.
I 100% agree with that. I so appreciated Katie's candor in talking about this. And it's just such a normalized concept for her. And I think it should be for everyone, because the amount of times that we just tiptoe around the salary question or feel like we're asking too much when we're really just asking for our worth and what is reasonable for the work that we're doing or the time that we're investing. I think it's so silly that, I mean, I grew up with the kind of that generation of, oh, we don't talk about money, or it's rude. It's rude to ask someone how much they make. And, you know, within reason, like, I'm not just going to walk up to everyone and be like, how much do you make, or how much did that cost? Or there's boundaries. But I think what that did for me was create kind of this like hushed sense around those topics of finances. And then how are you supposed to know? How are you supposed to know how to negotiate your salary request? Or how are you supposed to know what is actually valuable for the work you're doing? And especially, and Katie talks about this in the episode, but especially in the music industry or in the arts industry in general, you know, we've gotten to this pattern of, well, you do something you love, so you should be okay with taking less. I think there probably are a lot of us who have fallen into that realm. And I still, you know, I do love what I do. And so if I'm slipping into the performance role, sometimes I will go and, you know, take less than what normally I would ask for, because you do love what you're doing. And then you're coming back to it and you're like, wait a minute, I can love what I'm doing and also be allowed to pay my bills and also be allowed to create a life and live a life that is sustainable for me. And I think it's just been so undervalued and not talked about enough that we skirt around it. So I very much appreciated her openness to be able to say, like, no, I refuse. I think she said, like, I refuse to believe that I'll only make garbage for the rest of my life simply because I work in music. And I resonate so deeply with that mindset. And that, like, it really is that mindset shift that you have to have at first of, like, well, no, I am worthy of this financial gain and I am putting in the work and this is valid, this is good, and I refuse to believe that it will be this way. So let me do something about it. Let me find that next step.
I struggle with it often because I often wonder if it's just a millennial mindset that we've, like, shifted into the world, the even professional world, like outside of creative fields, like just the mindset that, one, you should do a job that you love doing, but also mm-hmm. this new age of, like, advocating for your worth. I don't know if that was something that people did or knew how to do or were taught to do, unless you were, like, a big executive of some, like, negotiating firm or something like that. Like, I don't know. But it's just, it wasn't part of normal practice to advocate even for yourself beyond, you were just supposed to show up and do your job and go home.
Yeah, you get what you get and you don't get upset.
Exactly. I often, like, think, I wonder what generations are thinking about, like, after us, but the generation, or before us, but the generation after us, I know, has definitely embraced this, mm-hmm. like, full mm-hmm. speed ahead. Part of me is really, like, empowered mm-hmm. by that. It still, though, feels like such a intimate conversation to have when you talk about finances. And like you said, there are boundaries there, you know, you can't just go up to anybody and be like, well, da-da-da-da-da. But mm-hmm. I think we should be more open and honest about it within our field of music therapy, because we want more space at the table for people. And mm-hmm. when we're not open, it creates just more competition within the field of music therapy, when we should all come together to be able to agree, like, this is what our services are worth as a standardized practice. Like, this is across the board the minimum that we should be charging. Even if we start there, like, setting a base rate that is agreeable for everybody, I think that is really, will be really important for us, I think, if we came to that sort of agreement. But we would mm-hmm. need the openness and the transparency across different practices and professionals in order to be able to do that and get to that place.
Yes. Yeah. It would take a lot of collaboration and a lot of conversations and communication. And, you know, I think that's the first piece, right? Is this communication piece, this conversation of being able to be in the spaces where we can have these conversations in, you know, the appropriate setting and with people who are willing to engage and have the conversations, because it does cause competition and it does cause issues for the field sometime. If you're, like, looking for a music therapist and the rates are wildly different across the region or across your own city or even across, like, globally, the fact that there's such a discrepancy and disparity between how much therapy costs here in Kingston versus in Toronto versus in Vancouver versus in Bermuda versus wherever. And so, you know, there's going to be those fluctuations because cost of living, and that's the same with any profession. But, you know, I like that idea of having a base rate that we can all agree on, you know, globally, because then we say, okay, great, you have the freedom within your region to, you know, set it what you think is reasonable for the people in this region and to tailor it that way without diminishing the field, I suppose, without charging less than we feel the services are requiring us to be able to charge. It's a good goal to work towards.
Maybe we'll see it happen within our time of practicing. It would be something maybe even to collaborate with the World Federation of Music Therapy mm-hmm. on, because they have all the intel in the different regions even of the world.
Yeah.
So if it became mandated that people like report what they were making, they could then generate anonymously
a
base rate for, you know, music therapy services mm-hmm. in each region.
And I know people are craving that too, because the amount, like in my work on the MTAO, I get a lot of messages from people about that. And we have a fee schedule, and I know a lot of the other associations do as well. But even within that, you know, there's such a big range. And so people are trying to figure it out. Entrepreneurs, as well as people who don't consider themselves to be entrepreneurs, are kind of like, where do I start? That's a big number.
And to also like know how to back it up. Like it is different. Like I feel like when you're a new professional and you have this number that people are charging you, sometimes it can feel strange to advocate for a certain cost when you don't have as much experience. Just being able, I think, to connect to other music therapists within the community, just so that you have that support. All of the training that you go through in university, plus your internship, to get you to a place where you are practicing, you have enough experience mm-hmm. at that point to charge whatever the base rate is. That is what we're saying, that as soon as you get through all your training and you have all of the credentials according to wherever you live in the world, then you have enough experience to be able to at least charge that much. And so we want to work our way up to that. But also in thinking about this identity, I guess, as whether of being either an entrepreneur or somebody who is an employee, that is something that requires some deep thought as well before you jump into the field, figuring out where you're best suited. Because when you step into that role of entrepreneur, there will be a lot of advocating for fee schedules. There will be a lot of advocating just in terms of outreach and setting up contracts in general. And so I really loved when Katie was very candid, like we said before, about, you know, entrepreneurship being a journey that's not for everybody.
I don't think I had given it as much thought until we had that conversation with Katie, actually, because I on some level feel like everyone in our field is an entrepreneur, whether you're actually in an employee position or a private practice or whatever, simply because of what in our field, what goes into it and all the things that we have to do at home to get into those employee positions and whatnot. But at the root of it, for sure, not everyone is meant or needs to be an entrepreneur. I think we've seen entrepreneurship, you know, in that, just put it in that box for a minute of what an entrepreneur is. We've seen that blow up a lot in the past few years and people wanting to, you know, carve their own path. And I think that's beautiful. But I know so many people who are like, I don't really want to do that. I would really like to go to my job, work my 9 to 5 or my 10 to three or whatever hours I have and come home and live my life and let someone else worry about the nitty gritty. And I respect that so much because there are lots of days where I have those thoughts and I'm like, that would be nice. It would be nice to not, you know, have things pop into our mind about our practice at like 10 o'clock at night when just trying to get some solid rest. Or there's a lot of different pieces and a lot of different hats that go into entrepreneurship. And so I think there is such a need for all of the different ways that we engage in the field, and the worth doesn't shift. It's just, where do our passions fuel? And I know we talked about this with Katie in the episode of like using that interest to negate burnout, essentially, of, you know, if you are not passionate about doing some of the tasks of what it means to be a quote unquote entrepreneur, and you force yourself to do it because you think that that's the route to go, well, then you're just going to land up back in a place of burnout. Or if you really dislike the employee model and you're like, well, no, this is a solid job, and you go and jump into that, again, it's not actually as fulfilling as you thought it was, then you're just not going to be in that well state. So I loved that we were able to have that conversation of bringing everyone to the table and just really narrowing in on the you. What do you need as a professional to be able to thrive and survive and all of that good stuff?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Part of me is really sad because what I've been seeing in conversations with people isn't so much that people aren't cut out to be entrepreneurs or don't feel like they're suited to be entrepreneurs, even though there's nothing wrong if you do make that decision for yourself. But it's saddening to me for people who have that entrepreneurial spirit within our field to choose the path of being an employee because it provides more security. I'm hoping, like, one of my hopes is that we can get away from that and that we are able to find a way to build security into the role of a business owner, an entrepreneur, in that your benefits are tended to as a result of that, because that's what comes with being an employee. Benefits packages, being able to not worry or have that as an additional stressor in your life. And it's so important. It's so invaluable when you're thinking about a career. And so being able to have those needs met is just something that we need to figure out, because there's so many people who are meant to be entrepreneurs and have that entrepreneurial spirit, but it's just easier. And I will say, I'll agree, it is easier to just be an employee. Like you said, you won't be up in the middle of the night just thinking about ways to get better. Or maybe if you do have that entrepreneurial spirit, you can't help it anyway. So
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I think there are a lot of gaps right now that we need to learn how to fill, but making sure that one, it's a sustainable profession is something that is definitely something to work toward in the next couple decades or so, so that we can see people's true passions shine and be able to flourish no matter which path they choose to take. That's something that I really value about our conversation with Rachel, is that her path wasn't a linear one either. But, you know, the business model that she has developed is something that was not what she had imagined originally, but it has grown into this beautiful thing that was out of necessity and out of people really seeing a need for this and really needing a space for this to be available.
I really love that too. And I think it flows so nicely with the conversation about Katie's episode as well, and the path that we take. And in the episode with Rachel, we were talking about that exactly. And, you know, how sometimes we end up in these unexpected parts of our journey simply because of what we're seeing. And you, Haley, actually made a comment about how it's so interesting or so great. Maybe I can't remember the exact wording that you had, but essentially noting that these gaps can be fueled by people's passions, or so people finding those passions and responding to the questions that we're seeing or responding to those gaps or those needs. And I think that's so beautiful about our field, or just, you know, just the malleability of being able to build our careers in that way in general, of saying, okay, so this is what I set out to do, which I think was the case for Rachel. You know, this is what I'm doing and this is what I'm seeing. And so now how do I respond to that? And knowing that, you know, maybe you might not be the person to respond to every single thing, but really being able to listen to that internal pull that's saying, hey, you know, I keep coming back to this and I keep seeing that we need more education or more mentorship or more support for these people. And so how can I really listen to what the universe is sharing with me or what my field is sharing with me? And am I the one to take action? And I just think that's really beautiful. And I'm grateful for the work that Rachel is doing, because I do think it is, you know, a gap within our field. And I think that the resources are invaluable, and the approach that she has of really using kind of that, I guess, that question mindset or that education or that curiosity mindset to fuel the advocacy is such a interesting and impactful way to do the work. I think that it can be very draining to do advocacy work a lot of the time. And I think that it takes a lot of energy and a lot of brain power to do the advocacy work. And so I really appreciate that that energy and that mindset of kind of leaning back into our strengths and our passions and our interests and the unique ways that we can connect with the people that we're engaging with to just have those conversations or to be able to fill those gaps fueled by passion of our interests and using those strengths in that way.
It comes back to like the power of the pivot, because I think we talk about it so much within our work, like our clinical work, and being able to adjust according to need. But the way that like Rachel had envisioned the Music Therapy Academy wasn't one that was an online platform initially. And so having built the concept for what she wanted to put out into the world and how she wanted to hold space for advocacy through these education models, that was already, like, the groundwork was set. And even though it was originally thought to be an online education platform, that's what it turned into as a result of circumstances, as a result of, you know, demand. Even before COVID, it was, okay, so many people are interested. There is an area here where there's a need, but I can't be in all of these places at once. I can't do multiple in-person workshops or enough to sustain the need. How can I meet this demand in a way that is achievable and sustainable for me? And so that's when she had to pivot. And even though it wasn't something that was her favorite idea, or even maybe in the wheelhouse of her expertise, holding online webinars, it has grown into something beautiful in a space that is truly valued by our music therapy community and speaks to what you were talking about earlier, really listening to the signs of what people are asking of you and being able to respond in a way that best meets that need. And I think that's a beautiful thing that we kind of, in our professional lives, we kind of set that self-piece aside almost. If we bring it back to the beginning of the conversation about finances and, you know, generationally being in a different time period where we're doing more advocacy for ourselves and not afraid to ask questions or to show up in a way that is most authentic and aligns well for our well-being and whole selves, as has been a theme this season. But when we're in that professional mindset, for some reason, I think maybe there are just always going to be these glimmers of having to set self aside, because it is just such a different hat that we have to wear in order to get things done. If we are setting out to do a mission, it's our job to listen to the consumer of that thing. Mm. Even within therapeutic relationships that we build, it's not about the music that we enjoy. It's not about performing in the way that we enjoy or being able to make music with somebody in a way that we enjoy. It's about that person that we are attending to and building a therapeutic relationship with. It's not about us. And so I think the important thing to draw from all of this is knowing that, yes, there are those pieces that we will have to just let be and kind of let the professional side of things, you know, take root in those. But then it's important to have the tools that you need to advocate for yourselves in the areas you do have control over. Things like finances, things like the way that you want to show up in the world professionally, the ways that you want to practice, the ideas that you have and how you want them to, the need that you want them to fill within the community. These are the things that we do have control over and that we need to harness and do some self-reflection work and be able to attend to, and really knowing where to go and how to look for those resources and places of support are incredibly important. And I'm so grateful that we were able to have two of those on this podcast for you to dive into a little bit deeper and learn a little bit more about what they have to offer in those respective areas.
Thank you
you for listening to the Able Voice podcast. If you want to hear more episodes like this, subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at Synergy Music Therapy.
You can also find links to our most recent and top-rated episodes on our website at www.synergymusictherapy.com.